the Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.
All right, welcome to today's podcast. I'm here with Paul the Ultimate Vaden. He is a former professional boxer with a record of 29-3 who held the IBF light middleweight title in 1995. Now Paul is a motivational speaker, a mentor, and an author. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to have you here.
Likewise.
The ultimate.
Yeah.
So when did you think about, that you wanted to box? You must have been pretty young, right?
I was very young. I was four years old.
What was it, like a pillow fight or was it like?
I saw Muhammad Ali on TV.
Nice.
And that was like my introduction. I didn't really know much about boxing. Nothing, actually. But it was something about him. And watching and trying to understand. So for Muhammad Ali is like equivalent to being Superman. He's like a superhero.
Yeah.
So at that age, at four, I would see my superhero all the time. And so whenever I would see him, I would just get totally excited just by what he was doing. And I would try to mimic it and imitate it. And just like I said, becoming totally enthralled by the sight of him. And so obviously at that age, I didn't get started yet, but at least it gave me something to look forward to, even though it seemed far away. And then at 8 years old, I got started.
Nice. Did you get some gloves or what was the first step?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. The reason why is gloves at that time seemed so far away from me, for me. It's like I didn't have there was an individual who lived next door to us by the name of Mr. Cliff Darden, who boxed in the Navy.
Okay.
And he had a garage and he had a heavy bag. So me being a mama's boy then, he would sneak me off in the garage and he would show me some basic fundamentals, allow me to hit the heavy bag. So once again, I was getting some reps of learning and understanding and becoming even more enamored with boxing, but still it was far away. And so that got me more enthused about wanting to be. And so when I saw Muhammad Ali and I understood what he was, even at that young age, I wanted to be that. And what I knew once I found out what that was, I wanted to be a champion.
That's cool. So you kind of knew you wanted it, but did you know in your mind, did you know that someday I'm going to be a champ?
I want to be him. So when I found out what champion was and the sound of it, just the sound of champion, champion, I wanted to be that because I kept hearing champ, champion, and I read champion and I knew it was something really, really cool. And I wanted to be that.
That's cool. So. Did you see a pathway when you were that age?
Or
just kind of knew that the end goal was there.
Yeah. I think it's, you see a superhero and you think one day I'm going to fly. And for me, flying was being a world boxing champion. Not really understanding. You remember I had this heavy bag, which was an outlet for me. But I guess for me, I always believed there was going to be a path to, what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Time would go by and be 8 years old. My father wanting to get us involved with the recreational play activity. He got us in with the Jackie Robinson YMCA, signed us up. And that's where the path started because they had a boxing team. Cool. They had a boxing coach and that's where it got started.
So from about four, maybe let's say eight till I think you got the title when you were 27.
27, yeah.
You were the champ when you were 27. Or would you have a title before that?
From eight, I mean, was amateurs. And so I had a highly decorated amateur boxing career. So I got started from Junior Olympics and things like that. And then obviously eventually the maturation would go to becoming an elite, like on the U.S. team, getting to travel the world, having over 330, had 337 amateur matches and just perfecting my craft, moving, adapting, understanding different styles, and just my goals extended, by then. I mean, I was number one. And so, but that through all that, everything that I've been through since I was 8 years old, once I made that vow to become champion of the world, the one thing that always was sustained was the hard work and the appreciation for it.
Yeah. So did you go into lightweight at younger and then middleweight, or what, how did that progress?
Well, I started boxing. My first fight, I was 52 and a half pounds.
So my first, you were light.
I was light. Yeah. So I was, I started boxing at competitively. My first match was 52 and a half pounds. Wow. So then you move up to, 55 pounds eventually. So as I got older and I got into the Junior Olympics, I got to 100 pounds. And you've got to understand something. I was also losing weight in between that. I've been losing weight since I was young, meaning that if I weighed 70 pounds, I was trying to work to get down to maybe 65 pounds or 60 pounds, maybe even 60 pounds.
So you could fit into that category.
Yeah, so when I was 100 pounds, I was at 119 pounds, and I was eating a tangerine a day for a week because you're in national competition. But what it was teaching me was sacrifice, and it was teaching me the ability to abstain from things and embrace it and grow and become stronger because of it, as opposed to, falling into prey to saying, I relent. I wouldn't relent to things like that. So then I would grow. And as I grew and I got to 147 pounds and then 156 pounds light middleweight, then that kind of, stayed there. But you got to understand, when I was at 156 pounds as an amateur and even 154 pounds as a professional, I was walking around like 170 something, even 180. And then I would lose
drop that weight in
a month, 1 month, eat and drink once a day for 30 days, have one lean cuisine at dinner, and then one orange sobe and for 30 days consecutively. And just, but through that, I would, one thing that I had of the things was my endurance, which you would think would not be my thing because I would lose so much weight.
Yeah.
During the course of a match, you think normally people wilt.
Get tired.
I got stronger. I was known for getting stronger as the matches went on.
Wow.
But the preparation as a child, the abstaining from things gave me the strength, the mental endurance as well.
Yeah. That's a huge part of it, I'm sure, is the mental side of it.
I believe it's just as strong, because at the end of the day, you get to a certain certain place where talent meets talent.
Yeah.
But what's going to be the separation? And so, it's kind of like when the person finally gets hit after you've been knocking someone out all this time, then you finally get hit and you don't know how to counter. You don't know how to react. You don't know how to overcome.
Yeah.
It allows you it's like the big bully thing. When the person finally gets hit, or when you finally get knocked down, or when you're finally behind in a match when you've always been up, what happens then? So I think those,
it comes from like experience, right? More you've had those hits, the more you can deal with it, right?
Correct. So basically, I think having to encounter other challenges within the fight, meaning not only the opponent, but having to come down in certain weight classes, coming down in weight. I don't think it was the healthiest thing, but I think it was helpful for me as far as how I was packaged.
Mental strength.
Doesn't work for everyone, but I believe it worked for me.
Yeah. Do other boxers have to, I'm sure they have to that, right?
Oh yeah. I'm not the,
It's like a normal.
Absolutely. I'm not the,
I know wrestlers do it.
It's funny you say that. That's who I learned it from. But I kind of tricked it out and turned it to, but I learned it from wrestlers, you know, how to lose it. And they actually have it harder because, I don't want to say harder. They actually have it hard because they have to make the weight and then have to compete within, an hour or so, where at least, I can get like a 27 hours before I get in the ring to kind of replenish, it's still difficult and it's not, I learned a lot from wrestlers when I first was getting started out as far as cutting weight, wearing rubber suits and things like that.
Getting all the sweat, getting the water out. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Saunas, I'm sure.
Oh, I still, to this day, I call myself the king of the steam room. I stay in there just this morning. It's become my place of gratitude as well. My place of prayer, my place of putting my plan together for the day. So it's
cool, a little meditation.
Meditation, all of it, while being in the trenches, though I still want to have a hill. I always want to have some type of incline while I still have to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a challenge.
Correct. Because right? Because we're seated right now and I still want to feel like I'm in the corner and I have a minute to gain something, you know, knowledge, once again, adaptation, strategy. How do I, because the bell's going to ring eventually. I'm going to have to get up and I'm going to have to do something. And what am I going to do when the bell rings?
I've always wondered in a match, is there a moment where you're like, where you're feeling like, gosh, I know I can beat this guy based on just the interaction when you're going and you're boxing and you're like landing punches, you're doing well. Mm-hmm. Is there like a moment where you're like, it just turns, like where maybe you go in, you know, you can beat him, but like, you're like, it's tough, but then it kind of, is there a shift sometimes when you, in the middle of that fight where you're like, oh, okay, I got this.
It's good. So then this is just the way I'm built. I never feel that I have anything secure. And I think that's worked for me, where it's been matches where, I mean, I'm doing a number on someone, but I don't feel that I have it secured.
Yeah.
Meaning that
way you can't let up.
You can't. So I don't let up, but there is a flow, just like in anything. It can be music. It could be a concert. There's a certain part of a song. You see certain performers where you see they're
in the zone.
And you can feel it. You can see where they're dancing, where they're moving, the way they have it. And I think in boxing is the same way. And you get a feel where you get in that positive momentum that goes, and you're just in a great rhythm and the punches and the fluidity, the movement, everything is just connecting and coming together that you don't want the bell to ring to stop.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
and do those minutes go by fast or sometimes they go by slow? Like,
so for me, it's just, I love being in that process because it's, once again, separation. I'm about the endurance. I'm about the long haul. I'm about the beginning, the middle, end. I like to see change. Mm-hmm. I like to create change and see things dissipate from someone as I break them down. And as they see me get up 10 to 15 seconds before the bell's about to ring to start again, and they're still slumped on the stool, waiting to get that last millisecond and be lifted up by that corner. And I'm in the late stage and I'm up.
Yeah.
So, And I'm that same way when I play other sports, be basketball. I want to be up. I don't want to sit down. If I'm working out, I don't want to sit down. I want to be up because I want to have that momentum of that rhythm of that. I'm ready for the next song. I'm ready, you know. And when you see that on the other side, it can be wilting to the person because they go, "Dang, does he get tired?"
Yeah,
because I am
right,
and so.
A little psychological there.
Psychological. Yeah. So once again, it goes back to how the mentals are so important as far as anything, because talent meets talent eventually, and what's going to separate.
And I bet you that thing that you're doing also gives you more energy and puts you into a different headspace.
Correct.
Absolutely. So I think this there's something about that in business too, when you're, but it's not just luck. It's, you've worked hard to get your business to this certain level. Mm-hmm. Your business is, you know, is fine tuned from all the things you've worked on and all the things. So there's a correlation, I think, to business and sales and, you know, and being able to be able to close when you're selling. And it probably is, you know, but those little psychological tricks too, I think would be helpful and I'm sure your book talks about that maybe, right?
Like Answer the Bell talks about the patterns, the path, talks about the wins. It talks about the losses, but it talks about, what you do with the losses, what you do with the wins, and what it is you continue to get up. I had a conversation today with an individual before coming here on the phone, and it was about where they currently stand. And my thing was, if you continue to stay, right now they're losing on the cards. They're losing rounds. Well, there's a way of looking at it. When the bell rings and you kind of have a feeling of that, gosh, I'm really not connecting. It's really not working. And I'm talking about business. I'm talking about life. I'm not just talking about punches. This is life. This is business. What changes are you going to make for the next round? How are you going back to your corner? Are you coming back eager to go back? Are you coming slumped down on the stool like you're not coming back the next round to win it, to obtain, to make changes? Are you willing to make specific changes? Are you willing to throw feints, to draw something, to make something happen? Are you willing to do something different? Mm. And are you, once again, are you seeing, while you're doing this, are you still seeing the other side of that rainbow, that sunshine, that knockout blow, that touchdown? Are you seeing it? And, and are you working for it? Because a lot of times it's like, here I am, another day. I'm coming to work. You know how things are, and I'm just playing this out. And hopefully this happens. Well, it's not going to happen if you come like that. And if the night before you prepare and you go, hey, this is what I'm going to wear tomorrow, and this is, you start seeing yourself in the throes of positivity, the throes of victory, the throes of landing successive combinations.
Yeah.
In business, in life, in taking chances, but seeing it, actually visualizing it, but even preparing for victory, meaning the day before, I think things start to open up. And if you check off what you did, because that's my whole thing, is I like for people, we talk about people resting on laurels and things like that. I don't rest on laurels, but I am a reminder. Things happen for a reason, so you can remind people of what they've done. And people I work with, I like to remind them. My memory is insane. I mean, insanely, it's insane. And that's so cool. I like to remind them on certain things of themselves. Give them those reminders. Remember the punches that you land on this date, this right here. Okay, now if you do this, and if you have you thought about maybe coming from this way, coming from this pattern, coming from this side now, have you thought about maybe doing five of this, you know, so there's, I'm in the corner with them and I'm talking to them and I'm telling them and I'm lifting them up.
Is that kind of what your coach does when you're in the corner?
Yeah. What they should. Yeah. That's what should.
If they're good, right?
Yeah. And they should do. And what they're doing is everyone's different. You have some coaches who they only yell, they yell. Well, you don't yell at everyone.
Yeah.
And yelling doesn't necessarily equate getting productivity, positive productivity.
Yeah.
Because I want you to win, but then I want you to get back in that end zone. I want you to land blows again. I want you to enjoy the moment as well. This is a beautiful process to your story, to your script.
Yeah.
Meaning it. Yeah. Sometimes the knockdowns, and when you get up, or when you're on the ropes and you're getting hit, but you fight off those ropes and you get back to that center that I talk about, or you get around it. I mean, you're building that equity that you're building to your script. And the next time you get hit, you've been there before.
Yeah.
So you kind of look at it, but now you're going to come back even stronger. It's not going to be like a culture shock as far as, oh God, I can't believe this. I've had a bad day, a bad outing, a bad quarter.
Yeah.
You know? And so for me, I like to look to the next round, the next day, the next year, the next quarter, to being promising, because I promise that I'm going to step off that stool 10 to 15 seconds early, ready to win, ready to with the plan. And that's what I implore others to do. And they know that I believe in them. That's the one thing. My belief and my faith in them doesn't waver. So if I'm believing and I'm infusing that in you with, like I said, with patterns and with a plan, we're gonna win, and we're gonna land some significant shots. And
that's cool.
Yeah,
you mentioned something a little earlier. You said that you plan the next day. You even get your clothes ready.
Yeah,
and you visualize. I'm a big believer in visualizing the win, visualizing what your goals are, visualizing where you want to be in your future. Talk about do you imagine like the fight? Like do you play it through your head? Like you see the face, you smell this, like you go through it before? Like when you would be get ready for a big fight, would you like the night before like kind of run through things you're gonna do and like just imagine what was gonna happen?
So when I'm in training for a match, the part of my, I get up at four and run when I was running for getting into my row work. I got a full body wetsuit on. I've got my
you're doing a row machine?
Huh?
The row you said or no?
No, jog, row jog. Work, okay, row yeah. work. Yeah. I'm out on the road running and I've got a wetsuit on.
Oh, wow.
And I'm running and I've got my music blasting and I'm the only one out there and the cars following, but I'm in my cars are following me, you know, following me, my own team. And and so I'm playing the match. I'm always playing the fight through, meaning so in everything, I mean, in every manner, meaning where I'm not getting hit at all to where I'm getting knocked down and I have to get up, or to where I'm behind, or where, you know, or I have
run it through all the scenarios.
I run through all the scenarios of what's going to take place. But what always happens is, what's going through my mind is I always overcome.
Yeah.
I always find a way. I always get up.
Yeah.
And so you play that, you know, 6 weeks and you, as you get closer and closer, you start to play it. You're at a stoplight. You never, you know, practice. People say, oh, you work out, you know, 6 hours a day and all that stuff. I said, no, it's a couple hours, you know, and I'm not minimizing that. It's a lot.
I mean,
you know, a couple hours in the gym, you run, you know, all this stuff. But I never stop the process of being the greatest part of my my greatness, the pursuit of my greatness. I never stop. I'm at a stoplight and I'm waiting and I'm thinking about a specific, you know, back then boxing combination that I can land, something that I did in sparring that I could have done better. I'm playing over until the light turns green. You know, I get lost in the moments to be even greater. And so I guess the answer is, for me, I'm always finding a way to size up or to figure out a way to overcome. And when I overcome it, how I could have done it even better. I will look at fights. I look at, sometimes I see highlights of my matches. These matches have happened.
Yeah.
And I look and I go, gosh, I could have did that. And I play it out.
Mm.
But that also, the process plays out to the things that I do now, as far as, you know, business, clients, things, and how, you know, things that I say and speeches and you know, and you land those specific blows. And then you go, yeah, I could have done this, and this. And that's why you hear me talk about music. When you watch performance, you hear the album track, but then you see it live and then you see how it extends and you go, okay, because they're able to take it even further. They're able to enhance it and go
play with it.
I'm a huge Michael Jackson guy. Huge. I mean, I say two superheroes, Muhammad and Michael. Okay.
Yeah.
That's been since I've
love
been a
Michaels.
Kid. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And Billie Jean, if you listen to it on Thriller, it's what it is. Massive.
Right.
Then you listen to it live, it's extended, and it's like, but he has more liberties.
Right.
So that's when you start as far as your progression of yourself. And once again, what I'm talking about is, it sounds like it's athletics. No, that's life. Everything that I do has to have, you know, be it from the meditation to the focus, the gratitude, the thankfulness, the plan, the consistency, the sustainability, but also how to share it with other people. That's the most important thing for me, is to have the recipes, but also share the food and share the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And the mindset for me is, I want to see people win.
Yeah.
I love seeing people win. I love lifting people up and going, hey, you're don't let that number, I'm not going to let the 10 count hit you.
Mm-hmm.
You got more in you.
Right.
And you've got a chance. You've got a chance to, further your script, where it's going to be something that people are going to look at you and go, hey, because this, John, I got through because I knew your story.
Right.
And I saw how you overcame.
Yep.
And it inspired me, because I was sitting here sulking and thinking, then I heard your story, and that gave me and enabled me to go six more rounds than I thought I could.
That's cool. You know what I'm getting out of some of this, and it's interesting because I've studied the mind a little bit, not like in school, but like just in like podcasts and just people that are know a thing or two about the mind, mm-hmm. and the subconscious mind, and then the conscious mind, mm-hmm. right? So you got two real things there, where the subconscious mind probably is getting trained by when you're practicing, when you're yes. when you're hitting the bag, when mm-hmm. you're sparring, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you're in your run and mm-hmm. you're in your conscious mind mm-hmm. thinking about the fight,
right?
So you're training two minds,
correct?
Your instinct of like when that punch comes and you've been through that experience when you're practicing,
right?
But then you're also marrying that with your actual conscious mind, correct. To where both of those minds are one and unified.
Right.
And I think that we, you know, people who have had a lot of experiences in life are good at instincts, good mm-hmm. at like, you know, good at the subconscious thing and just mm-hmm. handling situations. You know, maybe they've been around a father who's funny and so they get this natural humor.
Right.
But like there's that, you know, and then maybe they don't practice with the conscious mind of things like their speech. Like I'm going to practice how the speech goes. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow I'm going to actually like mm-hmm. imagine how it goes. I'm up on the stage and mm-hmm. I'm going to do my talk. You know what I mean? Like if you... Some people don't do both, but what's the importance of doing both?
And so I'm glad you said that part, because when I do a speech, I don't necessarily
practice the words.
Not at all. Like not at all. I mean, I want to know
what you're gonna say.
The information
right.
from the information for what you're seeking. And I, you know, whatever, you know, I always say whatever, everything's important to me. So if you tell me something, I mean, I'm not going to forget that part. But I am interested in the surroundings so I can focus. I need to focus. I need to have the training camp, the preparation. Everything's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I need all that stuff, because that's where when I'm running and when I'm working out and when I'm doing it in my head, it's all coming together. And what's coming for me is just this positive a positive message that's going to strengthen others.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know when I hit where I hit, all that's going to come out. It's going to the energy from the people and what's needed. That happens. It's been happening.
Yeah.
But in the preparation and all the other thing, the angles and what, you know, the size, the all the other outer parts of it. That's what's important to me, and I'm going to work off that. And it's like you just play the music, and I, like I said once again, and I'm going to be able to do Billie Jean. I'm always going to be able to do and be able to say, and it's going to work. It's going to be effective. Once again, I put that out there already yeah. because it's important that it's going to be a message that's going to positively affect people,
right?
Because I'm going to tell someone else's story. It's not a boxing story, it's a life story.
Yep.
But I'm bringing you in the ring with me because I want you to win, and I want you to be able to fight. I want you to have the ability, but I want you to have that believability that I have, and know that I believe in you. And yep. I don't even have to know you a long time to know, for you to understand. You go, yeah, he really does believe in me. And because he believes in me so much, I'm freaking starting to believe in myself.
That's cool.
And I'm getting up now earlier than I normally would. And I'm doing other things that I have not done before
mm-hmm.
because someone believes in me
yeah.
and is putting me on this level that I never thought I was on.
Right.
So it just kind of cool. goes in, and I don't try to get in the way of that to try to, what do you call it? Analyze it too much. I just mm-hmm. know that it works, and it's been working, and I enjoy it. Like I said, I enjoy seeing people elevate, and through that, I elevate.
Cool. Let's go back in the ring. Did you,
mm-hmm.
do you remember the moment that you got the ultimate title? Like that
the world
that,
title?
No, the ultimate nickname.
Nickname?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
was it in the ring, or did someone call you ultimate, or was it like outside the ring?
So someone, a reporter, told me when I was an amateur, said that you just, I remember he said, you just gave the ultimate performance. It was something like ultimate. And I heard the name ultimate performance right here. Do you realize what you did? And what he said was, I would have the ability to land like shots, all these shots and not get hit and move around and just be like all over the place and, yeah. and without out in, boom, 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 boom. And so when he said that, and so this was 1980, 88, and then going into 89. And so in 1989, I said, you know what? I need to have a nickname. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I wanted Kid Ultimate. Because I was younger, I said Kid Ultimate. I thought something like Kid Ultimate. So I was Kid Ultimate for a couple years. Kid Ultimate. And so then when I turned pro, I just grew up and I said I want to be the Ultimate. And when the Ultimate and Kid Ultimate, I always wanted a name that went beyond a sport. So it wasn't about, you're like Ultimate Warrior and all that stuff. It's not any of that.
Yeah.
For me, it's a go-to person, an individual that you can count on. It's a 2-minute warning person that you can count on to come through. It's the person that is the free throw that's going to connect both free throws with no time left. It's the person that's going to catch the pass that's in the back of the end zone with no time. It's the person that's going to carry a person when they have to go up a hill and the person who is always going to come through and come through. So it's that type of responsibility, purpose, level. So it's and it just so happens that I think it's kind of cool name for boxing as well.
That's but cool.
For me, it's bigger than boxing. Nice. Paul the Ultimate Vaden.
It's cool. What does it feel like to get knocked out?
To get knocked out?
Yeah. Have you been knocked out before?
No,
ever.
No.
But you've been
hurt.
You've been close to it.
I've been hurt and stopped. Yeah, no doubt. It's sparring. Being hurt it's a feeling that you once again, being a positive person, it's a part of a path it's a part of a storm that you have to work your way out of. And so if you think about, once again, the other side of the rainbow, the other side where the sunshine lives, you have to get through that. Yeah. You have to work through that. And you have to understand this is a chapter that I have to get through to get to the next chapters.
Right.
So it extends. So you continue. So it's a process that you have to work through. I was hurt. I'll never forget it. Jason Papillon. I was in Atlantic City at the, he hit me. It was my first fight in Atlantic City. I was undefeated. It was my 20th match. Mm. And I was winning the match and he hit me in the 11th round of the 12th round. And the TVs couldn't see it. My back was to the TV, but he cracked me. Wow. And I was winning this fight. And
where did
he
hit you at?
He caught me on the top of my head, like the top of my head, and he got me and I was hurt. And I was he rocked me, and I was moving out of the way, and we were in the bell rang, and I was hurt, wobbly. However, and this is a lesson that it was very important to me. When that 12th round came and when I went to the corner and they got me back at one, it was imperative that I really did a number in the 12th round, meaning that I recovered and also got everything back at one, meaning that I ended the fight strong. Because I never wanted an individual to ever say, gosh, if I just had two more rounds or, I would have got him. I wanted it to be like, okay, he's got things back at one. And I did for that fight. So, but yeah, that was, there's been times in sparring, there's been times in fights. There's been people who, I fought some really good fighters and he hit him, you go, whoa, okay. Whoa.
Yeah, man. I have this vivid memory as a kid when I saw Mike Tyson fight. Mm-hmm. I think it was Buster Douglas.
Yeah.
And
February 10th, 1990.
And I think he lost, right?
Yep. Tokyo, Japan.
And I just remember Mike not fighting like I always remember him fighting. Mm-hmm. He was like not on his game. He was like a little bit hesitant. He wasn't as he was on the defense versus on the offense. Mm-hmm. And I just I don't know what it was, but in that moment I kind of thought like, is he throwing this fight? Is there like something in there where he just, and I remember it was like, who was the guy? Don something with his hair. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And like, there's money and all this drama around him. And I was like, and I was young, but I kind of thought to myself, that's not the Mike Tyson I remember. And so I don't know. Is there and you think there's any truth to that? Or you think that that could happen does a boxer just have bad days and they just don't, they haven't visualized that he can beat? Because I thought he could have beat Buster on that fight if he would have given his all,
Okay, so
that's my own, you know.
Yeah, thoughts, and so here's a couple of things. You asked me, does a person, you know, the first question as far as, well, the answer to Mike Tyson, I remember, I didn't even watch the fight. I remember I read the newspaper and my brother had called me and said something. And I, cause, I didn't know anything about Buster Douglas time, but anyways, when it happened, then I watched the fight. I think Buster Douglas created the blueprint on to beat Mike Tyson. Mm. I don't believe that it was that he was off his game. I think that Buster was definitely on his game. Mm-hmm. He wasn't afraid of Mike Tyson, which was a big thing back then. I think people were so they got caught. I mean, when they were intimidated by Mike Tyson, when he comes in a ring with Iron Mike Tyson, I mean, they just would freeze up. This guy didn't. When Mike Tyson went to hit him, he hit Mike Tyson back. Yeah. He was hitting him back harder. He was winning the fight. I mean, he was dominating Mike Tyson.
Do you think maybe that rocked Mike's psyche a little bit?
Oh, I think so. I think so because he wasn't used to people.
Yeah.
I think Mike always had an issue whenever, if you really think about it, his losses, the individuals, none of them were afraid of him. I mean, Buster Douglas was the first one. He created the blueprint.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he threw the fight. There's too much money for Mike Tyson. For just boxing period. When Mike Tyson is champion, because they tried, I don't know if you remember this, you might be too young to remember. They tried to have it where the fight was given back to reverse the decision because there was a rumor that they felt that he did knock down Buster Douglas in, I think, the 9th, 10th round. And they said that he had a long count. So they were trying to get the decision reversed. They wanted Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson being champion is big for boxing.
Money, yeah.
And you know, Buster Douglas had a great story, but I believe Buster Douglas beat him. I believe that, like I said, he created the blueprint.
Yep.
And you would follow up with the, you know, the Holyfields and all the other people. Yep. Whenever Mike had an individual who would stand up to him, he didn't react. He didn't react too well.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. The psychology of that. That's probably a real thing when you go in and like someone's not afraid of you.
They weren't, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
He pushed him back. He hit him back. He got knocked down. And remember I said he got hurt. Talking about Buster Douglas, and the next round he came back and he started hitting Mike Tyson again. One round later, he would knock Mike Tyson out.
Yeah. So that brings me to, you know, today's boxing, right? Yeah. Like I love boxing when I was a kid. I saw Rocky and that's kind of what got me into loving it.
Cool.
But like, you know, these YouTube guys that are coming up and, you know, I don't have a huge opinion on the Pauls or Jake Paul or whatever, but I've seen a couple of his fights and what are your thoughts on, you know, YouTube stars going into boxing and Jake and fighting Mike Tyson now, which is kind of a crazy.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to Oscar De La Hoya. He said something very interesting the other day, which I totally agree with. If you want to be legitimately considered a boxer, then you do legitimate things.
Yeah.
You know, you fight boxers first off. You don't fight. I mean, I never fought a basketball player, an NBA basketball player. Okay. First off. Okay.
Right.
I'm being kind. That's quick work. I fought only boxers.
Right.
Okay. And it's just interesting how we keep moving the goalpost for, you know, it's like, so it's fighting a mixed martial artist. Once again, it's not a boxer.
Right.
And it's
with
like
these certain rules in place where, you know, Diaz could fight way different and way.
Correct.
If it was a fair fight, it would have been a different outcome.
He's not a boxer. I mean, you know, I don't care. I mean, you can come in. He's not an actual legitimate boxer. So, legit. And now you're boxing. Now you finally fight a boxer, but the boxer is 58 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, hasn't fought like fight. I'm talking about a fight. I mean, an actual fight. Did an exhibition 4 years ago.
Right.
But that wasn't a fight in forever. And so. I understand the business part and I actually salute the mindset, the creative mindset of what you're doing, but then don't try to say you're a legitimate boxer and don't try to also say that you're trying to become champion of the world.
Right.
That's where you start to lose me. And like I said, so you're a YouTuber and that's what you are.
It's entertainment.
And I also don't have a problem with Mike Tyson or anyone else being involved in it. And I get the economics of it. I get they're going to get a lot of views and what have you.
You get paid.
So yeah. I'm not getting in the path of that, but I'm just talking about Jake Paul or, you know, I'm sticking with him because he's the one, you know, Logan Paul didn't really necessarily say he wants to be like a champion. Jake Paul is the one that's really, you know, saying is he's a YouTube boxer. He hasn't fought. He fights mixed martial artists, basketball players, and now he's going to fight someone that's 58 who hasn't fought in forever. And at the end of the day, that's going to be another exhibition. There's no way that a state is going to license that fight and let a 58, he'll be 58 by that time, get in the ring who hasn't fought in forever. I don't care how he looks great physically.
He looks great. He's got the speed still.
And mind you, let me say this. I'm not saying that he couldn't beat Jake Paul. I'm just saying you can't take the chance. I'm a person, obviously, that's a very sensitive subject with me as far as, so I'm very serious about the seriousness of what can happen to someone. And I don't want that to happen to anyone. And I know commissions are not going to. So it will be at the end of the day, after they do their sales on there, you're going to understand what are the structured plan on what's going to take place. As far as, are they going to wear headgears? Is it 2 minute rounds or wherever, but it will not be,
it won't be a regular fight. Right.
But I celebrate the fact that they're able. If Jake Paul said, "Hey man, I just want to just do this and I want to kind of create something, and I don't really want to become a champion because I understand the parameters of what takes place as far as that, but I just love boxing and whatever." Okay, that's cool.
I want to get in a ring with
these certain people and whatever. I think that's great.
But the idea that I'm going to go beat Mike Tyson, you know, in a
and
fair
do what
fight,
from yeah. that?
Right.
So you beat Mike Tyson, then how does that, once again, if I were boxing, I already had enough people questioning, like, "Oh, when are you going to fight someone?" Like, wait a minute, why is no one saying that? And I was fighting people who had great records, and it's like, "Oh, when he fights someone, what's going to happen?" And then you go, you beat this person, and they keep moving up. He hasn't had that. He's fighting, you're trying to get him in the ring with an actual live boxer.
Yeah, it feels like show business to me.
And I don't mind, that part of it. Only the aspect of the legitimacy and that's all.
So I've just recently been seeing a bunch of news about Ryan Garcia. What are your thoughts on Ryan Garcia?
Yeah, it's interesting. When Ryan first came on the set, I remember my barber brought him up to me, and I didn't know who he was. And he was like, "Yeah, he's on Instagram." And I'm like, "Okay, Instagram." I go, "What's that have to do with boxing?" And so I unfairly didn't know about him. And I saw him fight one time, and I was kind of like, "Oh!" And then I watched him spar, and I kept the tab, email of him sparring one time, and I said, "Oh no, this guy's he's talented. He's talented. He's quick. I think one thing I respect about him is that he takes on. I mean, he lost to Tank Davis, but he was willing to find out." I love that about people. He's got a big fight coming with Devin Haney. Once again, one of the best pound for pound fighters. He's willing to find out even after finding out as far as with Tank Davis. So I respect that. I have immense respect for that. I hope everything is okay. I really do. There's been some things that, like, on social media that he said has concerned me.
Yeah.
As far as his mental state and where he is, I hope and pray that he's okay. And if he's not, I hope that they do something to call off this fight. I'm looking forward to the fight with the best Devin Haney and the best Ryan Garcia.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to it. but I don't want anyone getting in the ring if they're not physically and especially mentally equipped to be in there. You play baseball, you play football, you play basketball, play golf, you play tennis, you play all, you do not play boxing.
Yeah. And I wonder what it's like for young people to get a level of fame and to reach, you know, because he's got some kind of title, right? Like, but like he's going now and using that platform to, and we call them influencers right now because, so he's got a following, a big following, time. And now he's speaking out about stuff. And you just wonder, like what is that? Like, you know, I grew up in a time that I didn't have YouTube.
Right.
So all my things that I accomplished back when I was young, you know, skateboarding or whatever, they're not on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, your stuff's on YouTube now, but like back then there was no YouTube.
No, not at all.
You were winning fights. So you had to go back and tape it to VHS or whatever. But like these younger kids, they get this fame and then they can easily like speak directly to their followers and to the world and it goes viral. And then who knows what that feels like?
He's smart with it too. I mean, that's what concerns me. I mean, he knows what he's doing. And so that's where I'm getting, you know, concerned, especially, you know, I've been watching him lately. It's now all boxing. He's been, you know, he's back to, like you said, from here on out, it's just going to be about the fight.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's Oscar and him saying, hey, man, this is messing with the promotion, because there's a lot of people concerned.
Could call it off
or have people, it can sway people in a direction to not want to pay for the fight. They're going to pay for the fight, or pay for it to go to the fight, attend the fight. It just can affect the fight. It can affect the promotion. Saying, how could you let this guy in the ring in this mental state?
Yeah.
And it's obvious because the signs, once again, about YouTube, it stays here now. So people are going to be able to look back and see the evidence. You guys didn't know that this guy can fight. Look at this interview he did right here. Look what he's saying right here. And you guys didn't know this, you know, as far as. So I just hope he is, because I do think he's talented. And because of he has such power in his hands and he's quick, which gives you an opportunity. A chance, you know, because Devin Haney's is the real deal. But I'm really looking forward to the fight, but I want both of them mentally physically 100% ready.
That's cool. Yeah, so, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, hope the best, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's talk about secrets to success.
Yeah.
Do you have like a summary of something that is like a nugget of something that you would say? Is there a secret, or is it just a lot of different things kind of pulled together?
The secret to getting succeeding, the believability, the visualization, seeing it for me. I mean, for me, it's actually just seeing the other side, getting to the other side of it. So even before the contract is signed, meaning not just myself, but the people I work with, seeing the other side to it and understanding, obviously work comes with that, but I want to see the other side for me personally. So if there's something I'm set out to do, I see the finish line, the finished product. I see the sunshine. I see the cheering. I hear the cheering. I see all that positive, those positive things behind it, and you grow from it. But then, in order for that, I have to validate that, and I validate that through the work. And through the work means I have to come back. And that also means that every day is not going to be a sunny day. There has to be a test.
Yeah.
And I have to embrace the test. Mm. There has to be joy with repetition.
Yep.
So there has to be all these intangibles, these instincts of when things happen that I can counterpunch, but I have to keep coming back. And when I come back, sometimes I have to come in a different direction. And sometimes I don't keep coming straight. I have to come from an angle. Boxing taught me angles, you know, and so
can't taught go
me,
straight on.
I have to come straight on. Everyone, sometimes I have to come out and then to come back in. You know, I have to come around to get to the other side. But I have to keep coming, and I have to be purposeful.
Yeah.
Understanding that my purpose is going to overwhelm negativity, overwhelm what's in my way. It's going to overwhelm, but the consistency. My secret to success is that believability and the faith, the understanding, what can be done. Believe, become.
So. Do you know how many punches you've thrown in your life?
Woof.
You said you're good with numbers.
Woo. I couldn't tell you that one. I'm great with numbers as far as remembering numbers, but I've thrown a lot. I just this morning I threw over I don't know, 600-700. I mean, just this morning on the heavy bag. Yeah, easily.
I was hearing something about Steph Curry and how many shots that he's taken or practice shots, right? Mm-hmm. And then how many have landed.
Mm-hmm.
And you just
think how many he made?
Yeah, how many he's made.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think of like maybe like something similar, not, you know, totally, but in boxing, like, you know, you don't hit every punch, but you're throwing a lot and some of them aren't hitting, but the ones that hit are really what matter. But you've got to be, you know, like Steph Curry, like he's practicing, he's, you know, you don't see people don't talk about all the ones you missed. They talk about the ones you made, but there's so much practice that goes into being successful.
And there's also have to be a part of that because the way I box, my forte was the volume of punches that I would throw. And people don't understand, my right hand miss might be a setup to shield you from our left uppercut, or it might be. So there's a multitude of punches that are coming at you, but it's sometimes it's just an array to put in to sneak some distract to get something underneath or coming around from a different angle. But there's a believability that within that pursuit or with that onslaught, that there's going to be some signature shots that are going to land. I'm very confident.
Yeah.
And to go back to Steph Curry, there's such an artistry behind what he does, the practice, you see it. Once again, he shows up, he does everything the same, but I would have to think that he thinks every shot that he launches is going in.
Yeah.
And
he's probably visualizes it too, even when he's not on the court. Right?
And even when he misses,
yep.
You have to understand that within your misses, what you make out of the misses. Okay.
What you're learning.
What's the benefit of the miss of what took place? Because you don't make every shot. You don't land every blow.
Right.
You don't get every deal done. Sometimes you miss and you win. What do you make out of that? And how do you build on that for the next go round as far as business, athletics, life, relationships, or wherever, you know, there are things I've said and I've done to people when I was 12 years old that I sometimes go, God, I can't believe. And I was 12. There's something I did a long time ago. I'll never forget. And I will never forget. And I go, I can't believe I did that. And, and it was the innocence of a child. But I also think of myself as such, once again, that I'm upset at myself. They go, man, you're a kid when you did that. And so, when you're taking shots, there is a believability that I'm going to make every shot, and you know that you're not. So you've got to find, if you believe that you're going to make it, you've got to find there's a conversion even within your miss. How do you change? You know, if I'm throwing a right hand a certain way and I miss that shot, but the shot is a little wide, how do I straighten it? And maybe I can see it, because the next time you're looking for the wide, now I'm coming down straight down the pike with it, you know, as far as, so there's a conversion that's about to take place. It's kind of similar to like when you see when the kickers they do and they kick through the timeout. If someone calls a timeout and they still, instead of them stopping, they kick even whether they miss it or make it, and they kind of go, yeah, I'm good right there, let's stay like this, or I miss it and I go, okay, I gotta think, but you know, I'm adjust on it. It's kind of like that mindset.
That's,
you know,
cool.
Yeah.
You had the signature uppercut.
Yeah.
That was the thing, man. Is that you can't? It's hard to see that, right? So it's hard to defend against it. Is that kind of why you did it, or what was the secret to that?
It's a great question, and then here's the answer for it. There's an individual that I was blessed to have come in my life in 1992. His name is Abel Sanchez, and Abel Sanchez worked with Terry Norris. He worked with Triple G. He worked with me in 1992. I credit him for creating the professional performer that I became. We worked together for one full year. And I gained so much knowledge in that time, had so much fun. But he told me something after observing me 2 weeks. He says, with your hand speed, he says, you are going to have a shot that you're going to throw better than anyone. He says, I don't know what it is yet, but when we find out what it is, and we will find it, we will perfect it. Mm-hmm. And it became the uppercut. And so when we found it out, we started to work, and he, just the way he taught and the structure, and there's such a disguise behind my uppercuts, but there's, once again, there's this presentation before that makes it happen that you have to pay attention to. And there's certain things that are done, and then I come with it, or then you come bold thinking that you've got me and I'm all ready for you. And you're either walking into it or you're leaning into it, and it's coming fast.
It rocks you.
It comes everywhere.
Too, right?
It comes everywhere. It comes your eye. It comes. There's so many parts of where it comes from. It comes your chin. It comes from your nose. We went through a period where I broke 7 consecutive noses in matches, where fight was stopped and they say, doctor, stop that too. And then he would look at me, he goes, well, shot, we'll go right uppercut or left uppercut. And it's with either hand. But the speed is, and Abel was able to see that. Now, mind you, I've been boxing since I was 8.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. So it wasn't until that relationship that I realized that I had uppercut, because I didn't know any other time until that. And from then on, I understood the pattern. So once again, you find something, you perfect something, you nourish it, and you build on it. And the uppercuts became, definitely. There was no one who threw better uppercut than me.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And quick and, yeah, it was lethal.
That would be scary. So why'd you write a book?
Part of my maturation, remember, I wanted to be champion of the world. Yeah. That's all I wanted to be. And when I say that's all I wanted to be, that at that time, that was everything. As I got closer to my purpose, becoming champion of the world, my life started to just, that expansiveness, there was so much that went on in becoming champion of the world. I understood that there was a bigger platform that was laid out for me. Boxing was the vehicle.
Yeah.
There was more in me. Boxing was just, it was just the first part of it. And so I didn't want to be defined or categorized by just boxing, but I love boxing. And so without boxing, I wouldn't be any of these things.
And you just so many life lessons that, you know, extrapolate to other things,
absolutely.
Business, just personal relationships, right? Like
everything.
Just and overall success in life.
Absolutely. So you live life and you have things to go on in your life. And then, you know, you talk to people and then you start to understand your script is out there from a standpoint of people want to hear. And at the end of the day, why'd I do it? Because I wanted to help other people. And I understood that through this book, that it would be able to help people understand that, this person was against the ropes and had to get off the ropes and had a goal, first off.
Yeah.
A goal that was not supposed to be, it was against all odds, but it happened. And after it happened, he had to encounter certain things that knocked him down, and he had to become a champion again. And with that champion, becoming that champion again, created a second act, which created new avenues for me to meet other people, for me to grow, but also to keep me in shape, and keeping me in shape like a champion. So it made me purposeful. And so with that, I have to uphold that standard, the ultimate. I have to, because that didn't stay. When the bell rang for me the last time in the ring, champion, that didn't just stay in the ring, as far as it had to go everywhere I walk. Mm-hmm. I walk and I feel every place I walk like it's a ring walk. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Meaning that it's like there's a purpose.
It's a mindset.
There's a mindset that there's a reason why. And I'm walking like a champion, but I'm also still the seeker. I'm still seeking a bigger mountain to obtain. But I'm also trying to help others reach their mountain as well.
Cool.
So Answer the Bell, the book, became my global plea for others to understand that they need to answer the bell to reach their destinations, to reach their highest selves, and understand when they reach whatever that plateau is, they have to create an additional height for it.
Cool. Do you have a favorite chapter in the book?
No, because is there a favorite chapter? I do actually. It's when I won the title and when I took my belt to my father's grave. It's my favorite. My father always was. He died May 24th, 1992. So before I would become champion of the world, but he lived within me. Throughout that, he became additional inspiration for me to fulfill that goal because he always used to brag about what his boy was going to do. Mm-hmm. And so when that belt came in the mail, Federal Express, this brand new belt that, I won on August 12th, 1995. My belt arrived August 18th before I was headed out to Palm Springs and I took it straight to his gravesite to hoist it for him, this brand new belt, and let him know that it had been done and to show it to him because we would watch TV together and we would see people and that was going to be me. Yeah. And so and obviously it was very emotional a moment, but that was probably my favorite chapter to be able to write that and also thank him there for everything. So, yeah.
That's cool. And you were born in San Diego? Grew up in San Diego?
Born in San Diego, yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, sure did.
San Diego's proud to have you as a local legend, man.
Proud to be here. Cool. Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you so much.
Yeah, what are your, do you have some good memories of growing up in San Diego?
Yeah, just always learning from people. Yeah. I've always, just the people that have been in my life, I've always been a sponge. Like I said, I have a crazy memory. Mm-hmm. So it's like people say, yeah, you don't remember me. And I finish the sentence for them and go, of course I remember you. This, and this. They go, you remember that? I go, of course I remember that because it's a part of the script. Part of, you don't forget. You don't forget where you came from.
Right.
You don't forget your script. And it keeps you grounded. But also, once again, I'm about the heel. I want to create the heel. And the heel, sometimes you have to remember where you've been to know where you're going. And
I love San Diego.
It's
get these rainy days and then we're like, but like, isn't amazing? I love the sun and I get so happy when the sun's out.
Of course.
And I don't know. I'm a believer in sometimes, the sun it helps with positivity.
Absolutely.
Right. So being around sunshine, is a good thing to affect your mood.
Of course.
And I guess like you could say, you have to have mental strength to not, like you could still be positive in any environment, but it just helps, right? With a little sunshine.
It does.
Sort of naturally gives you that easy kind of lift.
It does.
But I think it's probably important as a principle that come rain or shine, you gotta show up
and you can't let weather. So I'm from San Diego and I live in San Diego, but also I've lived in other spots throughout because I had to get what I need to get, become what I need to become.
Yep.
I lived in the state of Washington and so it rained quite a bit during that time. And I used to hear stories about that. But I didn't understand because what I was seeking was real sunshine. I mean, sunshine in me was becoming the best I can be as a boxer. Yep. So I moved there. And so, it rained every day, but I was learning so much and I was growing as a boxer. And I've lived in Michigan. I've lived in Vegas. Like you just said, the weather is not going to determine what you're going to get from me. And it's not going to be coming to the mic saying, well, since it's raining, this is what you're going to get.
This rain check.
Or you're going to get this, because of the weather. The weather, it's going to be sunshine in whatever I'm doing. You're going to feel the sunshine in what I do and what I render. And it might be pouring outside no matter what. It's so,
create your own sunshine.
Yeah. Create your own sunshine. But yeah, it is beautiful, but no doubt San Diego when it's sunny, it's beautiful. Cool. No doubt. Without a doubt.
That's cool. What about for salespeople? Any like specific advice that you have that know has helped them?
Once again, show up. And show up with a plan, show up with the mindset that you're going to overwhelm. I know with house market and things being down, but a plan, a mindset that understanding that you are going to overwhelm what is negative this round, this quarter, that you have to show up, you have to hustle and continue to find ways to check off. I've thrown my combinations. I've done my bag work. I've done my road work. And in within your profession, and not have it, well, because of the situation, you don't minimize yourself to what is going on. You still have this, you still uphold the level, recognizing that there is the other side that is going to happen. But through that, you have to show up like it's a world title. Like it's a world title fight around, and it will happen. And you don't want to be all caught off guard when it does. And you don't want to be surprised when it does. You still have to be ready to flourish, be ready to endure. And sometimes you have to take these body blows. What are going down? They're building you.
Yeah.
They're building you. If you let it,
yeah,
you can let it build you or you can let it knock you down.
Right. Right. So a lot of salespeople, we're talking about sales, they'll close a deal, they'll close a bunch of deals, have a good month, and then they'll sort of sit back and like let up.
Yeah.
I know you have a story about Michael Jackson that that resonates with you. Talk about that.
Yeah, he Michael Jackson always was in a wannabe star and something mindset of what he always finished songs strong.
Yeah.
He never It was imperative. If you look at his major, all of his songs, not a million, he always ended songs strong. And then he's always on to the next.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson basically died trying to surpass Thriller. Think about that. The biggest selling album ever.
Massive.
He never was satisfied. He won the 8 Grammys. And the next, that morning, they said 2:30 in the morning, after winning 8 Grammys, which is still a record, he was in the studio trying to tweak and find rhythm sounds to be better. So he wasn't satisfied with the moment. He was never satisfied having the biggest selling album ever. He was always finding ways to elevate beyond Thriller. So to me, that wasn't a music lesson. That wasn't an athletic lesson. That's a life lesson, business lesson, whatever. You don't become too secure on anything. You don't have anything sewn up.
Right.
And so when you have someone like that, so talented, so massive, as an icon, who still sees himself just beginning, meaning like he's got more better things ahead and he's working for it. We need to have that same thought process as far as you get a sell. You go, okay, now I've got to go. I got to get the next one. And you recognize it and you're in your thankfulness for it. But then you're waiting for because the bell's going to ring again.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do? Are you still thinking about this last? Well, I got this last sell, so I can afford to get knocked down. Or it's going to be the individual, and it happens. Someone's going to do it. Yeah. There's going to be someone who's going to say, you know what? Great. Put it right here. On to the next cell. On to the next one. Next one. Yep. And people are going to look and they say, why he or she is doing this, this, and this? Why can't that be you?
Yeah. And that's why I don't think there's any accidental heroes or accidental, you know, top producers. I think with that story about Michael Jackson, he was that guy that won those Grammys because he was the person that would get up and do and keep going and try to get even better.
Yep.
He wouldn't have got that win if he wasn't already that person.
Never. And it wasn't. When it happened, like I said, it happened to be up at 2:30 in the morning. And that taught me when I won the world title, and I never talked about this, I got up and I ran that morning, the victory run that I wanted to do.
That's cool.
After winning, I wanted to get up and I wanted to run, do the victory run. I wanted to see what it felt like, you know, but I wanted to get up and run as a champion, as opposed to, you know, taking it in, saying, no, this is the next level of what I need to do. There's still more work to be done. Whatever that is, flying ahead. And so that's not for Michael Jackson. That's not for me. That's for everyone to understand that there's, it's part of the extension of your greatness, of what you can do and what you can be. Sometimes I say when I'm in the steam room for others, I say, just please show them a sign. Mm-hmm. Give them a sign of possibility. Because sometimes we get beat down with stuff with negative, you know, bad news. Just give them a sign, a glimpse of hope.
Yeah.
But when you get that glimpse of hope, what are you going to do with it? Do you take it and do you rest it and then you soar with it? Or do you take it and go, okay, I got what I need. I got my quota for the month and I'm good.
Right.
Or are you thinking, you know, the chain's moving, you got the first down and you go, okay, I'm coming right back again. I was listening to a mic'd up on Pat Mahomes, who I'm just immensely impressed with. Mm-hmm. And the guy is just the freaking winner, man.
Yeah.
I mean, just listening to him mic'd up, and it's all genuine, how his motor from the Super Bowl game, from the moment that when they were in the locker room till they came out, till they warmed up, till they kicked off, to the ending. And what does he say every time? I tell people this all the time. He keeps letting you know, we're not done yet. He just won the Super Bowl, and he reminds you, we're not done yet. Mm-hmm. Man, that's cool. That gets
you. That's a winner's mindset.
So think about that. Yeah. Now, I didn't even know I was going to bring it, but we're not done yet. So when you get a deal, get a sale, I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
You haven't. I used to tell my trainer when in boxing and training, when things were starting to really come, he goes, baby, you looking good, man. You looking good. And I say, guess what? You ain't seen nothing. Wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
The momentum.
That's it's when you're not, your best, right?
That's when you say, hey, hey, thanks, but you ain't seen nothing yet. Well, you wait till tomorrow. Or if you have a good round and you sit there and you start saying, yeah, check out this next round.
Yeah.
That momentum starts to get. So when Pat Mahomes or someone like that, but that's for everyone. That's not reserved for everyone. Could have that type of mindset.
Yeah.
And sometimes in life, we need that corner. That corner is what, says, hey, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. But I'm tired. I did this, and this. But guess what?
I deserve a rest.
Someone else is tired.
Right.
Someone else is getting it at it too. They're tired too.
Yep.
Don't let their story be the story that you could have.
Yeah. Reach for your dreams. Don't just.
Let someone else reach and get your dreams.
Right.
I mean, as far as if they are. Let's do this together and let's find out once again, talent on talent, what's going to be the separator.
That's cool. It probably starts in every aspect of your life, whether it's diet, obviously mantras, meditation, exercise, all these things come into play when you're trying to be successful in not just, you know, an athletic sport, but in, you know, you have to have the energy to be able to go out and sell, the right. energy to go out and go after whatever it is your dreams are. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. Like, are there other mantras you use, or are there certain diets that you think help? You know, what do you got to do to get yourself ready for that?
So let's go to the diet part aspect. So I started, this is my dates guy again, May 1st, 2009. My son, I'll never forget this, told me that I was letting myself go. I'll never forget it. And
Dad, you're getting a belly.
He said, and I'll never forget, he was playing in his game room and he was on his playing video games. He didn't even look at me. I was giving him his food and I was giving him his lunch and he
called
was
you out
playing and he without even looking at me.
Wow.
And he says, Dad, you're letting yourself go. And I says, no, I'm not. I said, no, I'm not. I go, what are you talking about? You know, you start trying to convince yourself. And he, I'll never forget it. He just looked at me, shook his head once again, never looking at me. So I went in my bedroom, looked, and I said, okay, that was that was the end of April 2009. May 1st, I started. Boom. Dead. You got it once again, whatever. I'm back. I hurt myself in playing basketball October 3rd, 2012, morning playing basketball at JCC. That's a Wednesday, you could check. Wednesday morning. And, really got messed my so I couldn't play, I couldn't do a move around, and so came back like I don't know 5-6 months later. May 1st, 2014, I started eating one meal a day, May 1st, 2014.
The OMAD diet.
I so the reason why I did it wasn't even a diet. I at this time in my
like
life
now put 20, a name to it. It's called OMAD.
Well,
like
they do all this
day.
Stuff yeah, now. Right. Yeah, so people. Like yeah, I just so my thing was as I told people, I wanted to make sure that I was still hungry. I wanted to know that I was still that guy.
Yeah,
that's still that guy that used to eat and drink once a day. I was drinking, you know, liquids and whatever, but eat. Once a day, was I still that same guy?
Yeah.
And I found out quickly I was. And to this day, I still have been that same guy.
One meal?
And I always tell people, it's going to change. I'm going to have a second meal. I'm going to, it's going, because I've found out it's not even about diet, but obviously with everything else, too, everything works and everything, you know, because of that. But that wasn't the reason why I did it. Because people were like, oh, intermittent? I'm like, no, this is something I've been doing
for
all,
mentally,
it has nothing to do with that for me, but it's about my preparation as well. It's something that I go. It goes into my training camp on how I prepare for things. So I think knowing those factors, when you know those things, you go, okay, here's a person who's pretty dang committed. Obviously, very disciplined. And I don't want me not eating to have any effect on you. I want you to eat. If you eat, it doesn't bother me. I mean, that's like, oh, it doesn't. And so
there's no pressure.
Not at all. It's not like, oh, I don't want you to feel guilty about that. There are just certain things that I'm just ready to, I think I said this to you before. I'm in a wannabe starting something mode. When the time I'm driving to a meeting, anything that I do, I'm in wannabe starting fashion, and that track wannabe starting something is energetic, is passionate, it's sincere, and it has an energy to it that you can't help but be positively infused by it and by it. And so that's the mode that I come in with what I do. You'll never get a discounted version from me on anything that I do. You'll never get I don't care what it's like. I only know how to be one way, and I come with it because I understand the honor of what I do and what how it's going to help someone. Someone needs it, so I take those responsibilities and that purpose very seriously. I don't. Yeah. I can't have anything.
Yeah.
So that's for me. So that's, those are the things, the tools that I take. You know, you're going to get endurance. You know, you're going to get strategy. You know, you're going to get thought. You're going to get someone who has a memory that's insane. That means that I'm not going to forget certain things. I'm going to remind you of things that you forgot that you told me. I'm into your fight just as much, if not more, than to your own fight, your own battle, your own goals.
Awesome. So you're passionate, obviously, about boxing. But it sounds like you're also passionate about helping people.
Yes.
How have you transitioned into more? You wrote a book and you're doing some coaching, right? And you're helping people one-on-one.
Yeah.
Like, talk about that a little bit.
Once again, the maturation, the expansiveness, the understanding that boxing is life.
Yeah.
That we get hit, we get knocked down, we land shots, and sometimes we stay in too long thinking that we got something secure, or we think that we reached that pinnacle, and there's still more room in the grass to grow. There's still more yardage to obtain.
Yeah.
You're not in the end zone. You thought it was the end zone. There's another level, or you have to get back there. I'm able to give that with the equity and teachings of that, and I want you to win. I tell you, not what you want to hear, what you need to hear, but I also tell you in a way that you know that I truly want you to win. Sometimes people try to talk down the people, and there's a certain way. It's like, I know how to get the best out of people, and it's customized because everyone's not the same.
Yeah.
Some people need to be yelled at, want to be yelled at. Sometimes some people don't. It doesn't work. It's going to be ineffective.
Yeah.
Remember, once again, your win is my win. So it's not, I'm the guy who's going to be there when you win, but I'm going to also be there more when you're behind. Mm. So that's the thing about me. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear and see me when you feel the world is on your shoulders. That's when you see and you hear me. That's when you get the inbox from me. That's when you get the call from me. When you win, yeah, I'm happy for you, but
we're not done yet.
We're not done yet. Yeah. So I'm ready when I see you again. I'm very happy for you.
Right.
But when the world is on your shoulder, or when you feel lost and you feel alone,
yeah.
That's when my work, that's when you really see and hear me. You're not going to be alone with, you know, as far as, and I take pride in that. Because I guess the boxing game has taught me that it's a complete opposite
mm-hmm.
of, it's a complete opposite. When you win, it's when you see everybody. And when you lose, it's like, I don't know what was wrong with them. It's like, wait a minute. We won. We did it. But then when we lose, I don't know what was wrong with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like now it's, you know, it's gone from plural to, you know, singular. And so I don't want to ever be that part. So boxing, as much as I love it, it's also taught me how to bracket how I'm going to be with other people, pattern how I work with people, how I institute my remedies to people. And as far as, so they know, no matter what, I'm there.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite failure?
My favorite failure. Probably the failure. So that wouldn't be a failure, but I can't say that. My favorite failure would be when I lost my first fight in like seven years, and the way I was treated by the media following it was just really was. Yeah, it was really bad. I really was.
It was bad. You got beat up, not even in the ring, but outside the ring.
Better,
too.
More so that. And it was what I was trying to obtain should have been saluted, because normally people don't do what I do as far as the way I went about it and what I wanted to do. And the fact that I lost, and then there was about the believability that I finally lost too. Cause there's a part you go, it's not a dream, it's real life.
Yeah.
And then you're knocked down and you got people not trying to keep you down.
Right.
That's the part that it was like, so yeah, you lost, but it was like, now people are trying to, keep me down, like keep me underwater. And so For a little while, I had to question. I was a little gun shy. I was a little paralyzed. So my next fight was against an individual who was undefeated, cocky, thought that I was that guy that lost that first fight. Mm-hmm. So you go, dang, this guy's confident. He's undefeated, and here, this is my first fight back. And I was willing to answer the bell, and I did. And I really did a number on that guy. Stopped him in the sixth round. And I'm not bragging when I say detach both of his retinas. I really put it in uppercuts galore. Did
this
a number.
This was like a solid knockout.
Once got the pattern and got used to everything and really did a number. But for me, it was a significant victory because I was willing to answer the bell following a loss, and a loss that people tried to suffocate me and drown me in negativity, and also try to push me away, and they couldn't. Yeah. And it gave me an opportunity to tell you this story now, mm-hmm. to tell someone that, you know, hey, yeah, I made it through and I was able, yeah, I lost, but I came back and
that's
I came
more
back
powerful.
Than to convince. Yeah. So it kind of, so they thought, I think Don King was my promoter as well. As far, I think Don and them thought they had an opportunity to put me out for good. Now put me up again. And so I was able to show that there was still some strong flames within me. They didn't put out the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. Yeah. Any shout outs to someone that's helped you along the way, or a couple people, or?
Yeah. Robert Coons taught me boxing at 8 years old, and Jackie Robinson, YMCA. Not only that, he taught me about life and taught me to be bigger than a boxer, more than an athlete. Mm-hmm. Taught me about interpersonal skills, delivery, being upstanding, community.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just been my late Uncle Ron, who gave me an opportunity to move uh, to the state of Washington and give me a rebirth as far as my amateur career. There's just people in my life and that they in my tree of life that have always had, I've always had a strong branch to reach for, to progress and to get to the other side of where I need to go.
That's cool.
And because of that, I can't leave other people without a branch or a hand or something to lean on to be able to extend for them. So,
yeah.
Cool. And shout out to people who are fighting a good fight. I mean, and who are believing and sometimes who are sometimes not believing, but keep showing up and showing up with the purpose and mindset that victory is nearer than you think. You just got to keep be willing to answer that bell.
I love it. Answer the bell.
Answer the bell is the thing. You've got it. It's more than in the ring.
It's coming. You may not be ready, but it's coming.
It's coming.
And you got to be able to answer that.
You're going to hear it. You're going to hear it.
Yeah.
But you got to be ready to do things once that moment arrives.
Well, tell people how they can follow you on Instagram. And...
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So I'm at Paul_Vaden, V-A-D-E-N. And then I'm at answerthebell.com. Facebook, I don't know how to think. I'm Paul Vaden.
Cool.
LinkedIn.
Google you, I'm sure.
Google me. Yeah. You Google me, you'll find.
Your book's on Amazon, right?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. Yeah.
I saw a lot of good reviews. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Thank you.
Very cool. And thanks for being a guest on the show. Oh,
thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun. Great questions, too. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Awesome. And if you're watching and you're still here, thanks for watching. Thanks for being a part of this. Please share with friends. Let us know what you want to hear on the next one. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks.
The Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.